From the Columbus Dispatch Education Team, this is the Learning Pod, a Gannett-powered podcast on everything education, featuring Sheridan Hendricks, Alyssa Widman-Neese, and Megan Henry. Hi there, and welcome to the first episode of the Learning Pod. I'm Sheridan Hendricks, and I cover higher education at the Columbus Dispatch, and with me are Alyssa Widman-Neese and Megan Henry, who cover K-12 education. After a year of what seems like endless and unpredictable changes because of the coronavirus pandemic, our education team wanted to find a way to bring you the most important education stories affecting Central Ohio. The Learning Pod is a bi-weekly podcast to do just that. This week, as we're all remembering the one-year anniversary of the COVID-19 pandemic, we're also remembering one of the biggest announcements that happened that week, and that was when Ohio Governor Mike DeWine announced on March 12, 2020, that all Ohio schools would close for 3 weeks. As part of a series of stories about this pandemiversary, Megan and Alyssa wrote a story about what this day was like when DeWine made this announcement and all of the effects following. Ohio was the first state to announce it would shutter schools after classes ended on March 16th to help curb the spread of the coronavirus. There were only 5 reported cases of COVID-19 in Ohio at the time. Ohio appeared to set the tone for schools closing nationwide. After DeWine's announcement, 30 states followed suit, closing on either March 16th or 17th. And by March 24th, every state in the country had emptied its school buildings, according to Education Week. So I guess just to start, I wanted to ask you guys, do you remember where you were when you heard the news that schools would be closing?
I thought I did. This is Alyssa, by the way. But after talking, I think I've gotten so used to working from home now that I assumed I was working from home, but I actually was in the office. We all at the dispatch didn't get sent home until the following day, and we're continuing to work from home. I remember more so the feelings that I experienced kind of leading up to that announcement. I think by the time it happened, even though it was shocking, people weren't necessarily surprised. One story that I've been telling people and that I posted on Twitter earlier today was on March 11th, which was the day before DeWine made the announcement, I was at Ridgewood Elementary School in Hilliard. It's actually just down the street from where I live. And I was talking to a class of third graders. Their teacher was selected to be the teacher on the trail for Iditarod, the dog sled race. And they were making these giant maps of the trail and using it as a geography and a history lesson. And it was really cool. And then all of a sudden, this PA announcement came over, and it was about a staff meeting that was going to happen later that day. And you could kind of tell by the way the teacher looked, and you could see people in the hall whispering, and you could just tell by their faces that, like, they knew something was going to happen. I found out later after talking with the Hilliard superintendent that these meetings that they were having were about preparing for ripping apart iPad carts that had been in classrooms so they could get those home to the kids. They didn't know what they were even going to put on them, but they knew that the kids were going to need the technology. They were learning how to set up virtual classrooms in some way, just ahead of what DeWine might say. So it was just a really eerie time. It's weird to, like, look back on it now, because I just don't think anyone really understood the gravity of what was going on just yet.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because I was also in a school on March 12th in the morning. So before DeWine had made this announcement, I had been visiting Ecole Kenwood, which is the French immersion school for Columbus City Schools, with a few other reporters. And we had gone to talk with their newspaper club about what it's like to be journalists and, you know, what it's like for them to report for their school newspaper. And it was interesting because I wasn't covering education at the time, so I wasn't really thinking about schools closing. I was focused on my own beat at the time. But, you know, all these kids were super excited. They were coming up to us and showing us their newspapers and giving us hugs. And we got back to the newsroom, and it wasn't even half an hour later that DeWine made this announcement. And I just remember feeling like, oh my gosh, like, I was just in a school, and now all of these kids are going to be home for who knows how long. It was just like a very jarring experience. What was the reaction from administrators and teachers after DeWine made this announcement?
One thing I remember was a lot of concern about things that weren't necessarily academic. Specifically for Columbus City Schools, in their district that has a large number of students living in poverty and not having regular access to internet or meals or supervision. You know, people weren't really working from home quite often, and many families in the district still aren't because of the jobs that they have. And I remember a lot of people asking, can we really shut the schools down? Because then kids won't be able to eat, because the students of Columbus all get free breakfast and lunch. And it really stopped and made you think, like, this is what we're talking about. You know, it kind of makes you realize the big role schools play in kids' lives. Then as things continue to go on, we got those logistics figured out. Then it was, well, now we got to figure out how to teach them. And I think that's something we're still seeing districts struggle with today. But I think everyone's trying to do their best.
And this is Megan. When I was talking to some teachers and administrators and students and parents for this story, it sounded like this was their, for a lot of people, their first like wow moment of the pandemic. Like, wow, this is serious. I talked to Hannah Powell. She's the executive director at KIPP Columbus. And she was just describing how she watched in real time the press conference where DeWine made the announcement, and how she went into a separate room by herself to just have a moment alone to collect her thoughts before spring into action, because she had to, and with her, along with her staff, to notify families what was happening and what was going to happen with their students. And two, I talked to a senior at Grove City High School who last year, he was a junior at the time, he was in the school's library, and he just heard the announcement over the PA system. And he remembers students in the hallway just cheering because they thought at the time this meant there was no more school, which was not the case. But for him, he was describing how it was a moment of like, wow, this is like really serious.
It's funny because now students are like begging to go back.
Right.
It really is an interesting parallel. I mean, when Columbus, they just got kids back in the building starting February 1st, and there was snow that day. It was the coldest first day of school I've ever dealt with. And everyone was like, oh my gosh, we're just so happy there wasn't a snow day. It's like, what reality is this? When does that ever happen? So it's, yeah, I think kids, they miss it now. They appreciate it a little more.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the snow days. Hannah, she was describing how hard it is for her as a executive director to call a snow day. And so she was just telling me how this felt just like a really long snow day when DeWine announced that initially a 3-week closure.
Yeah, and at the time, it seemed like everyone thought that this was just basically going to be a 3-week extended spring break, a very long snow day. And, you know, at the end of this 3 or 4 weeks, that everything would go back to normal and that we would all be okay. But clearly, as we know now, that wasn't the case. So when did schools and families, for that matter, know that this was going to be a long-term arrangement? What was that transition like for them?
Well, DeWine didn't actually call off the rest of the school year until April 20th. So things just kind of kept getting drawn out. I think people had a feeling with all the uncertainty going on that there was a possibility that the school year wouldn't be resuming. You know, with the Sun gatherings, it was already pretty much a given. There wasn't a prom. There weren't senior trips. You couldn't travel. Graduation was a very contentious issue. But I think when the announcement came on April 20th that you're not going back this year, I think that was devastating for a lot of people, especially seniors who had their last day of school and didn't realize that they had their last day of in-person school. But then even as things dragged into the summer, I think for a little while, people thought, well, next school year, will we be fine? We're never going to have to deal with another virtual senior graduation. This was just for the class of 2020. And here we are a year later, and there's conversations going on about prom and graduation and things all over again.
Yeah. Hannah was describing this was like a grieving process when they announced that their schools were going to be closed for the rest of the year. It was kind of like just like a punch in the gut almost. Same with the parent I talked to. She just was having a really hard time juggling working from home with her two students. And then it was announced that it was going to be extended, and it was just really challenging. I think people had their hopes up, but then they got dashed when that announcement came out.
So one of the reasons, especially back at the beginning of the pandemic, the phrase that we heard over and over and over again was that we need to flatten the curve. You know, if we take these precautions now, we can save ourselves a lot of trouble and heartache later with the coronavirus pandemic by flattening the curve as soon as possible. Did closing schools actually help flatten the curve?
So honestly, I think it's unclear, and I don't know if we will ever really be able to answer about the spring and that time period specifically. There is some research being done now in other states, and there has been some very limited research done in Ohio about COVID spread. The Ohio study was specifically about COVID spread in buildings. If a student is positive and comes into a building, it was found as long as students are keeping distance and wearing masks, it's not very likely that students will be infecting their classmates. And that's what health officials have been saying, is really the spread is coming from the community into the buildings. So a researcher I spoke with for the story Megan and I are working on is studying the spread of COVID-19 in Michigan and Washington. He's looking at whether in-person schooling affects COVID spread into the community. And he found that in general, it is safe to keep schools open and there isn't a lot of spread happening until community spread reaches a certain threshold. And then it becomes a little more concerning to keep the schools open. So, but the point where they reach that threshold is very different. In Washington, it was just 5 COVID cases per 100,000 people. That's when he started to notice the variance in the statistics, where it suggested, like, wow, the buildings are starting to contribute to spread. But in Michigan, it was in the low 20s. So there was per 100,000 people. So there was a lot more spread before it became an issue. And there's a variety of variables in terms of what's going on in the community when it comes to mask wearing and other precautions that affect that. So basically what he told me is it's really going to be hard to draw comparisons because of the limited testing data that's available from the spring. And when I say testing, I mean COVID testing, not standardized testing, which I know is what a lot of folks in the education world think of when you hear test. But there's just so many unknowns. I think right now, the focus, rather than looking back on what happened in the spring, is looking forward to what can we do now to get as many kids in buildings as possible while still not contributing to that spread of COVID, whether that's in the buildings or in the community. And schools are trying to find that balance to make that possible so we aren't suffering other effects like, you know, learning loss and emotional impact on kids. So yeah, it's a really tough question to answer. And I hope that that helps a little bit.
Yeah, I talked to a researcher for the story Alyssa and I are working on from Tulane University, and he's researching, you know, reopening schools and what that's like. And he said that it made sense for schools last spring to close at the start of the pandemic, since there was so much unknown and so much uncertainty. So he felt pretty certain that this has definitely stopped the spread to an extent, at least initially with the virus, since there was just so much unknown at the time.
Yeah, that's definitely the researcher I spoke with. He was from the University of Washington's Center for Education Data and Research. And he said the same thing. He said he would never, even if we can't prove that it did something, he would never fault school officials for doing what they did in March of 2020. There was just so much unknown, and it was better to err on the side of caution.
So, you know, after we've looked back at the last year and looked back to last March, I guess looking forward then, what do you guys think will be some of the long-term effects, both good and bad, of the pandemic on education? What's changed for us forever here?
I think the big question is when can students be able to be all back in the classroom, all of them at once, and also just when they're going to be in the classroom without these mitigation strategies like masking and social distancing. So I think that's going to be like a lingering effect that we could see. And there's really no answer to when that's going to actually happen.
Yeah, I agree. I think all of the uncertainty really takes a toll emotionally on children. And, you know, schools are aware of it, but from a distance, there's only so much they can do. And then on the flip side, you talk about academics, and we don't have a lot of data yet. Standardized testing is just ramping up right now. A lot of stuff pretty much waived last spring. So there's a lack of data to really adequately get a grasp yet of what's going on. But some of the data from the fall in Ohio for third grade reading tests and kindergarten readiness assessments, learning loss just from the spring, scores were lower than what was expected, specifically among groups of Black and Hispanic and economically disadvantaged children. Those students also didn't participate as much in the tests as other groups because many kids were still learning from home and the tests had to be taken in person. So you try and get a grasp and measure what this learning loss and what's going to be needed to get kids back on track is going to be. And it's just so unknown. But I do think there are positives, as hard as it is to think about them sometimes. You look at it, just Columbus, the city pledged $7 million of federal grants to get every kid in the district a laptop. Who knows when something like that would have happened if COVID hadn't occurred. And there's districts that are talking of keeping their fully online learning academies even after COVID. I talked with the Hilliard superintendent recently, and he said for some families, it's an option that makes sense. It's an option they want. And I don't know if districts would have been thinking about that if COVID hadn't happened. That's great for kids with health concerns that can't go to school even when there isn't a pandemic. So I think it's getting districts to think about being a little more flexible. And I think the superintendent told me, school leaders were used to laying out all these plans and having answers and trying to be ahead of everything. And really, COVID's turned all of that on its head. You have to learn to sort of roll with the punches, and you're not going to make everyone happy, but you're making the best decision you can with the information you have right now. And as long as you're transparent and honest and open, I don't think anyone can fault you for that.
If you want to learn more about how the COVID-19 pandemic affected K-12 schools over the last year, you can read Megan and Alyssa's story online and in print this Sunday. And if you'd like to support more local journalism like this, please consider subscribing to the Columbus Dispatch. Visit dispatch.com/subscribe now to learn more. Until next time, I'm Sheridan, signing off for Alyssa and Megan.